This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week we come to you from
Medellin, Colombia. A very surprising place for most Americans. Not many Americans have come here, but more are coming now. And for those people who watch the show Narcos, you understand the history there. The home of a guy who was actually killed 25 years ago now. I've seen a city, this city, go through such a dramatic transformation in the last 25 years. But one of the people who's also seen it go through that is the author of The Moon Medellin and The Moon Colombia Guidebooks, Andrew Deer. I'm talking to him right now from Bogota. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Good. I mean, you moved down there, 16 years ago, so you've seen all these changes, and you got there just at the end of the 7 years after the death of Mr. Escobar.
Yeah, I came down in 2002, and, you know, it's going to be a five-year plan, but I've ended up staying, 17 years or something, and it's incredible to think back then how the country was. I mean, at that point, there are so many parts of the country where, you know, the question was, is it safe to go? Is it safe to go? There were just a few pockets of tourist destinations that people were safe to visit, and it's completely opened up to the world since then.
It really has, and we're talking not just, you know, regionally. It's opened up globally, and, you know, depending on where you are in the city, you can still see, as you know, the remnants of Mr. Escobar. I went to the cemetery. I saw his grave. I couldn't believe they were still putting flowers on it. You know, I saw the house where he lived, which I think the mayor is now going to implode soon.
Right.
I went to the house where he died. And for those people who are binge watchers of Narcos like I was, what was amazing about that particular location is that when they shot the movie, when they shot the TV series, and they did the scene of where he actually was shot and killed, they went back to the actual location and shot it right there at the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, now, I know the mayor is doing his best to try to erase that memory from the branding of the city, but in a certain way, I don't think you can escape from it.
No. It's sort of a controversial thing to do the Pablo Escobar tour in Medellin. A lot of backpackers like to do it. It is interesting, and with Narcos especially, you know, there's been a renewed interest in Pablo Escobar. But there's also other places of interest where you can kind of get a more step back and think about the victims of the conflict.
Yep.
Like a few years ago, they opened up the Museo de Casa de Memoria, which is really the first time in the country that they've opened up some kind of memorial or museum dedicated to the victims.
And in fact, we're going to be talking to that curator a little bit later in the show.
Oh, great.
It's an amazing museum, and it's free, by the way. People can just go. But then when you first came there, if I'm not mistaken, people were still running around with bulletproof cars.
Well, I did. It seems crazy now. It seems really extravagant. But we moved down here, my partner and I, and that was the recommendation. You got to get a bulletproof car, of course. And then, if you're going to a restaurant or to your office, you know, take a different route every time, you know, just to be on the safe side. Thinking back, it's just now I don't, you know, think twice about that, of course. But,
Andrew, can I ask a stupid question? Here's my stupid question. Hey, let's go move down to Colombia. And the first piece of advice you get is get a bulletproof car?
Yeah, well, you know, I like adventure, so.
Apparently. And you survived. But
yeah,
I'm assuming the thick glass windows of the bulletproof car are a thing of the past right now for you.
Yeah, we got rid of that clunker. So now I just have I walk and I ride my bike and we have a Jetta.
Well, you know, the bottom line for those people who don't know about this is bulletproof cars are terrible on gas mileage. They weigh a little more. It's true. But here's what I've noticed. I've noticed the infrastructure has really changed. The architecture hasn't, thankfully. But the infrastructure has changed to the point where you can have a five-star dining experience and eat with global certainty, if you will.
Yeah, particularly in both Bogota and Medellin. You know, just to let you know, people in Bogota are very envious of Medellin. You know, people in Bogota think they're superior to Medellin. You know, it's the second city, but secretly we would all love to live in Medellin. I was just going to say, a real foodie culture has developed in the big cities of Colombia, and Medellin, and Cartagena, and Bogota, and Cali also. So, you know, it's just been an explosion of flavors, international flavors, and then no longer, you know, the people in Bogota would say dismissively that, you know, in Medellin they just eat beans and rice, you know, but it's really evolved from there.
It has, and in fact, I went to a dinner the other night at a restaurant called Carmen. I mean, it was spectacular, and it was a surprise to me, because I have to tell you, I was stereotypically expecting arroz con pollo, and they did a whole lot better.
Yeah, that's one of the top-rated restaurants in the country, really.
And speaking of no longer having your bulletproof car, the cool thing about Medellin now, they have a great mass transportation system.
Yes, well, they're very proud of their city in Medellin, and, you know, number one on the list is the metro that they've had for, I don't know, more than a decade or 15 years or something like that. And but not only that, they have introduced a streetcar system, a rapid bus system, and an innovative gondola system that connects some of the poorer communities up on the mountains around Medellin with the city. So it makes it much easier for students getting to school. Instead of like a two-hour odyssey to get to their school, it's like a 15-minute trip in the gondola soaring above the mountainside down to the city.
Yeah, the cable cars in Medellin, that was a big surprise to me, and I loved it.
Yeah, and, you know, in Medellin, they're very proud about getting things done. In Bogota, we wring our hands about things, but in Medellin, they get things done. They have that reputation.
They do, and, you know, we're speaking from the Marriott here. I mean, when you take a look at the hotels that are opening and the hotels that are being run, they've got their act together now, and there's some new little boutique hotels that are opening up that, in terms of design and in terms of use of natural materials, have really been cutting edge.
Yeah, before it was, you know, just mom and pop little guest house, and then the backpackers came and with hostels, and but now it's there's something for every budget, and there's more more thought put into construction, use of water, using solar energy.
Yeah, and the other thing that blew me away, which I wasn't expecting, is the parade of fruit juices.
That's one of my favorite things about Colombia in general is the fruit and the fresh fruit and fruit juices. And there's nothing better. You know, Medellin has a wonderful climate, warm all year round. And there's nothing better like for a midday lunch to accompany your paisa lunch with than a fresh juice. And there's just a whole range of juices you can go, you know, the weird like guanabana, which is sour stop, lulo, all these strange fruits that we don't have in the States.
And then they got guava, which, of course, you know, count me in. The thing that happened that I thought was so surprising is the other night when I was at the hotel, I had gotten in, I was tired, I didn't want to have a big dinner, so I called downstairs and said, hey, just send me up a fruit plate. Oh, my God. They sent me up, like, the entire produce section. I mean, it was unbelievable, and it was so nicely cut and arranged. That was another surprise.
Yeah, actually, I like to promote free things for tourists who come to Colombia. And one of the pleasures that I have is going to the supermarket and just checking out the produce in fruit area. It's amazing.
I do that, by the way, in every country, in every city I go to. I do two things. I visit the firehouse. I've talked about this many times on the show because they've been in everybody's house and restaurant and hotel. And I go to a supermarket because I want to see what, not just, you know, what I want to buy. I want to see what everybody else wants to buy, and then I want to try it.
Yeah, and, you know, I would say 80% or, you know, higher is from around there, around Medellin. It's such a verdant and fertile region.
It's true. Looking back, when you first came there in 2002 till today, what has been the biggest, other than the bulletproof car, Andrew, what's been the biggest surprise for you?
Well, the biggest surprise, I think, is that, you know, people aren't, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, you know, Colombia was definitely already turning the corner in much of the country. You know, I'm not going to say that there's no violence and there's no, you know, social problems that we have, because we do. Serious problems that we're working on. But, you know, why aren't more people coming here, you know, compared to Ecuador and Peru and, of course, Mexico? It's just a drop in the bucket still.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Every time I come to Colombia, I'm reminded about how much I don't know. I'm also reminded about how much I presume and then later find out I don't know. And my next guest knows a little bit about everything, especially in terms of this city and in terms of its development, in terms of its design, in terms of its evolution, if you will. Alejandro Echeverri, who's an architect and urban planner and director at the university right here in Medellin. You heard my introduction. When people first come here, they're usually surprised, aren't they? Because they're not expecting the architecture that they're seeing.
Yes. Thank you, Peter, for the invitation. It's an honor to be here. Yes, I am from Medellin, so I am not...
So you've seen all this.
Yes, I love Medellin. No.
But you've seen all the changes,
yes,
too.
Of course. So Medellin has this special combination of the geography. You know that it's a very valley with mountains, and the topography is and this combination of the life of the city, and as well that you can see the changes. And the architecture and the process that the Medellin had and is going on is intense, and is complex, but at the same time is beautiful. So this it makes an attractive city, I think so.
In what way?
Because you are in a real city. When I travel, I love to have in cities that has life, tension, intensity. Maybe the beauty in different forms. And I am from Medellin, so I am telling that. And I find that Medellin is intense. You have amazing people here. But at the same time, is a city that is going very fast. And we had a very big problems before. And the city is changing. And the spirit of the city is changing. And the public space, the architecture, the cultural life now is very active. We are in a Latin American city. We have problems. We have problems of inequality, structural problems of inequality. So this is a real city, but you can have the experience and in my case, for example, I've been working with Medellin for a long time, from the municipality before, from the government, and now from our center.
It's a real city, I agree.
Yeah.
It's got its tensions, it's got its rhythm, it's got its flow, it's got its energy.
And music, amazing.
And music, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's never changed.
Yeah, yes, that's never changed, yes. You could understand the history of our city from very beautiful testimonies, films. For example, the films of Victor Gaviria, the filmmaker, he's from Medellin, are very strong, but you could have the feeling and the taste how it was the most complex moment of Medellin, and some novels as well, from Fernando Vallejo, for example, or for Alonso Salazar, who after he wrote some very, very beautiful novels and testimonies of Medellin, he became a mayor. So this is a city that has this combination of people and the process. That
what's the most surprising thing about Medellin?
So it's a green city, but we still have a huge, big challenge to incorporate, to transform the green corridors and the natural condition in the every public life. But I think the we are a society that are very optimistic, always thinking possibilities. Even in the most complex times of the history of Medellin, we always think that we are going forward, and this sense of belonging of the society is very powerful. You feel everywhere. I don't know if you have this opportunity, Peter, but it's everywhere.
And, you know, you take a look even at this hotel. I would not have expected to find this hotel generally, except it's an indication of moving forward.
Yeah. Yes. In the past, we didn't have tourism in Medellin. Nobody wanted to come here because the situation and the violence. And so now the situation is completely different. The economy is moving. And at the same time, the physical transformation of the city is a very powerful indicator. So the design is today is a very, very strong identity of Medellin.
So, for example,
in terms of architecture, but yeah. in terms of moda, no, of dress,
everything.
Yeah,
we're talking to Alejandro Echeverri, architect, urban planner, and the director at the university here. You know, take a look even at this hotel. You know, if you look at what comes first, the chicken or the egg, the point is this hotel actually supports the boom in tourism now.
I think so. Yes, I think so. We have, like this hotel, we have others, but of course it's a represent in some case the moment. But one singularity about Medellin is that you have the most amazing designs and quality even in the poorest areas. This is a very, and the best transport systems that takes you even in the poorest areas of the north. And the programs of library parks that with a national, international competition, looking for the best architects as well, the public spaces. And so how to connect society and how to develop a more beautiful and more quality point of encounter for the city.
Well, not only do the locals have access to that because of your mass transit system, yeah. So do the visitors.
Yeah. We have a metro. We have integrated with the metro. We have a tramway system. And Medellin is another signature of Medellin is the innovation. So Medellin start a system that from teleféricos to go up to the slopes.
We're talking about the ski lifts, if you will. Yeah.
And this new system was the door to develop a lot of public policies and cultural programs in the upper part of the city.
Because those gondolas literally connect the communities now.
Connect the community, connect the society, permit that the flows of work and economy happens, and give accessibility for everywhere.
Plus, they're fun.
Yes.
Unless you're afraid of heights.
And one thing, Peter. One of the problems of some of the Latin American cities and other cities in the world in relation with the inequality is the invisibility, because you don't see other places in the city. So one thing that happens in Medellin is that you can access everywhere, and with cultural activities and so on. So we still have problems. Most of the people and the territories are visible and accessible.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger.
I'm joined now by Victor Vasquez, who's the regional head of development for Marriott International. What a coincidence you happen to be at a Marriott. I'm shocked. But one of the things that brought me down here was the South American Hotel Investment Conference to learn about, you know, a continent, if you will. And it's not really a continent because we're also including Latin America and the Caribbean as well. But a continent that was not forgotten but has not grown as fast as other continents, at least in terms of the public's perception of it. And yet you're growing rapidly, aren't you? In what ways?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Peter.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be here. Well, this continent, as we so call it, is really as subcontinent of the we call it the subcontinent of the Americas. We call it CALA, and we call it anything that's south of the U.S. and includes the Caribbean. And it really is a mixed bag of circumstances and political situations at all times.
Well, that's historic.
Yes. So I think From the U.S. point of view, Mexico has not been forgotten. It's very approachable. It's very near to.
And Mexico's had a huge economic year in tourism, despite all the things you see in the press. I mean, occupancies are almost at all-time highs.
Yes, it's proximity to the United States is a big plus. The further you get away from the U.S., the requirements to travel abroad and the unknowns make it more difficult for some people to start traveling down south. And that's what makes the furthest points in South America less familiar to most travelers internationally. Now, we see that the international trends are favoring us because they clients now have the curiosity. And why not explore places like Patagonia? Why not go to Peru, to Machu Picchu? This is becoming, as you say, it's sort of an unknown and a place to explore.
Well, in the past, it was left to high-end luxury travelers or adventure seekers. Now it's becoming much more accessible.
Well, you have the perfect example here. We're in Medellin. I mean, a few years ago, Medellin, Colombia, just a couple of decades ago, was a different Colombia. You had a different perception of Colombia.
Oh, let me tell you, I know. I mean, you know, it doesn't take much to look. I was binge watching Narcos. Okay, sorry.
Yes.
Probably one of the most, professionally produced television series I've ever seen. It was exquisite, and yet it told the story of murder and death on the cocaine train.
Yes, and this is again a good example of a country that has taken the right steps to transform their image internationally, and Colombia has now repositioned itself. At least the perception that we see of Colombia more and more is that people see Colombia as a destination for leisure travel and not only business travel, and therefore you see the renaissance of Cartagena and Medellin itself, and those that come here, they go back home, and they tell the story.
And not only that, you know, you mentioned Cartagena, Cali is coming back, Medellin, Bogota, but then look at the map. They have coastal islands here in Colombia that are exquisite, and nobody knows it.
Yes, it's the region is huge. It's a vast region. I mean, and if you include Brazil here, which is a massive territory, you have lots of places to explore. From a hotel point of view, we see it as a land of opportunity. We see that tourism is growing. People are becoming less and less, maybe the words, afraid of leaving home and exploring the world. And therefore that finding a brand, a hotel brand that they could recognize and they could stay at, gives them a certain peace of mind that the destination they're going to is going to be more enjoyable. Just last year, for instance, we completed the signing of the third Tribute Hotel in Argentina. And we have those in relatively remote destinations. We have one in Mendoza and one in Bariloche.
Well, Mendoza's not remote. It's the wine capital of the world, man. There are 880 wineries in Western Argentina that make Napa Valley look like nothing. I mean, I'm telling you, this is a place you got to go.
Absolutely. I had the privilege of, I was a general manager in Mendoza, so I know that region pretty well. But I can tell you it's difficult to get there. For somebody who's only got a couple of days and a long weekend,
long weekend's tough.
It's very difficult.
But, you know, you fly to BA and then go to the domestic airport and fly up to Mendoza. It's only about, an hour and a half flight, maybe? Yeah.
And that's the beauty of travel these days.
Yeah.
You can, if you plan accordingly and you have the place that you want to go and you sort out the documents, getting there, it's no longer as difficult as it was before. Now,
exactly.
If you add to this the fact that you are probably more familiar with the information about that place, and then you're familiar with the hotel you're staying at, you are in some ways in a good place to take that step and go.
You are. And for those listening to this program and who heard me on previous shows, you're even in a better place now because of the currency fluctuations in Argentina. Talk about a buyer's market. The peso has been so devalued that the dollar has seven times the U.S. dollar has seven times the buying power that it had 4 months ago. It's unbelievable. Now, that may not apply to necessarily hotel rates because you guys in the hotel business can adjust that in dollars. Same thing with airline fares. But everything else, local goods and services, what people pay for a tube of toothpaste or a taxi ride or a pair of shoes or a night on the town or an antique, wow, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, The beauty of having a region with diversity and different situations for every country is that you can always find, sometimes relative to your own currency, you can find some advantages in travel.
And that doesn't mean plan ahead; it means adjusting quickly.
Yes, exactly. And Colombia is one of those examples. I mean, we happen to be in Medellin again. We celebrated yesterday the signing of a Moxie Hotel, the first Moxie Hotel. Another brand, the first one that we signed in the entire region, including the Caribbean, and it so happens to be in Medellin. This hotel will go through its process to get built and opened, but we have 14 open hotels in Colombia.
We're talking to Victor Vasquez from Marriott International. Victor, you know, there's a statistic that completely floors me. It was given to me by your CEO, Arne Sorensen, that Marriott is opening up one new hotel every 14 hours. Hilton's doing it one every 16 hours. IHG, one a day. This is staggering.
It is.
And those numbers hold up in South America as well?
Well, South America is slightly different. I mean, the pace, it's always a balance between what you can achieve in Asia, what you can achieve in the States, what you can achieve in Africa and Latin America. Latin America is a huge territory, but with great limitations in terms of financing. So the ability to grow as fast as we could in markets where you have access to bank loans and
sure,
it's slightly different.
Well, let's dispel a myth. This is not about Marriott owning hotels. This is about Marriott developing and managing hotels. You have to deal with the owners.
Exactly.
And that's on a local level. If they don't have the money, you're not building a hotel.
And I can tell you that the market has changed significantly in 20 years ago. First of all, some destinations have become also more interesting to everyone, including like places far away, places like Bolivia. Years ago, people wouldn't think of going to Bolivia unless you went on a hiking trip or some far away destination. These days, owners even places
own a pair of Birkenstocks.
Well, we
could do that, yes.
Yeah, and the thing is, we rely on owners trusting a brand primarily, so they can build a hotel that can be either franchised or managed by the brand.
We talked about Argentina. We talked a little bit about Brazil, and Bolivia you mentioned. But there are so many countries here that aren't really on the radar, right? Uruguay, Paraguay. The Guays. you know, we can't really, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the elephant in the room, Venezuela, which is basically imploding. I mean, let's call it what it is. And yet, if you look at history and the cycle of history, I'm sure somewhere on your planning map is, in 3 years, we're going to be back in Venezuela when things get better. I mean, it has to be.
Well, we have presence in 33 countries in the region. We have 240 hotels, including in Venezuela. We don't operate in Venezuela. We refranchise in Venezuela from historically.
I don't think any of your competitors operate in Venezuela either.
I think a couple of them. They operate franchises.
Yeah.
Yes, because of the reasons that we all know, it's difficult to operate these days in a country that's going through a lot of difficulties. But you mentioned Bolivia. I could mention places like Nicaragua. I could mention places like Guatemala. They're beautiful destinations in themselves, and
people don't realize Nicaragua's got a seacoast.
Yes, and Nicaragua.
So does Guatemala, by the way. Nobody knows.
And Guatemala is one of the best kept secrets in the region. It really contains, in a small territory, it contains lots of wonderful things to visit. So our ability to expand, as you were saying, with local owners and deliver our brand and our brand promises. We have a strong pipeline. We have 120 odd hotels in the pipeline that we will open in the next few years, and that really allows us to grow with the time, with travelers looking for new experiences. And as we add new brands to our portfolio and we launch these brands in the portfolio, like we're doing with Moxie.
And by the way,
Colombia.
I can't keep up with the number of your brands. How many are there now?
We have 30 brands. 19 of them. 19 of them are present in Latin America and the Caribbean.
Wow.
And we're introducing Moxie now. And Moxie's, we think it's going to be. It has all the potential to be a huge success.
Now that's a lifestyle brand.
It is a lifestyle brand. It offers again for the investors, the local investors. It offers several advantages. One of them is that we are containing the cost to build that product while delivering a very exciting experience.
Let's talk about that. I mean, we're going to get deep down into the weeds on this one, but most people don't understand hotel financing. It took me a while to figure it out, too. And that is, if you want to know what your roommate's all about, you got to go back into how much it actually cost them to build a room on an average per room. So correct me if I'm wrong, Victor, but if it cost you $100,000 to build a hotel room, then the minimum rate you're going to charge your guests is $100 a night. It's usually 1/10 of 1%, usually.
Well, that's a good rule of thumb that doesn't necessarily apply to all markets, but it's
of
it's
course
a good
not.
One.
I knew you were
going to
correct me. Go ahead.
Yes, it's just a good way to relate brand and cost to build and rate that you can accomplish. That's really what
point,
it is.
If it's going to cost you $80,000 to build the room, then the room rate will reflect the fact that you save some money in the costs.
Yeah. So let's go back to one basic, which is a hotel will not dictate the rate. The market drives the rate for the market. So,
but if you overbuild to the market, you're
exactly
screwed.
There you go. So sometimes you can be a leader in the market and you can introduce a new brand. So some markets introduce luxury products for the first time, so they need to drive that rate up. So it does happen. But for the most part, you build according to the rate that you can accomplish relative to the brand that you and you better keep those costs at that specific level so you can achieve the returns that you're expecting.
Well, the key here is if you don't understand the market, don't get in it.
Exactly.
Because you're gonna end up getting, well, you're not gonna make it work.
Well, we have the we rely on obviously consultants in the region, but we are also have our own team that allows us to assess and look at projects and help owners make those decisions. One of the virtues of having 30 brands is that you have
30 opportunities to make a mistake.
Exactly. Well, no, not quite. I think it's to make it right. For the
you
owner.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, for instance, going back to the Moxie, I think it's a huge coincidence that we're able to sign a Moxie in Medellin when we're in this investment conference in Medellin.
Okay, but let me ask a really stupid question. What's the difference between a Moxie and a W?
Well, I think it has to do with the price point, but you said it before. It's the how much are you going to invest in a Moxie relative to a W. A W is a hotel that will require a lot of common areas and will require perhaps a spa and a couple
a
of restaurants.
Scene and the whole
yes, and a Moxie won't require you to do it. You don't have conference space at a Moxie, so your costs are going to be reduced and your room size is going to be more.
Can I say the word small?
No, I would say it's more it's designed accordingly to the amount of time that you're going to spend in that space.
And okay, we're talking
Moxie.
Smaller.
It's smaller. It's okay. Smaller, definitely. Yeah. Not small, but I would say it's smaller, definitely, because it's all relative to something, obviously.
Right.
So if.
But then again, I always argue: how much time do you spend in your room anyway, other than showering and sleeping? I mean, literally.
And there again, it has to do with the brand you're staying at. So if you're staying for a business conference and you plan to sit down at a desk and take lots of calls, and maybe you need more space. But if you're going,
so now we're talking Residence Inn,
or maybe it's you're going to a Westin or a Marriott hotel where we have a proper desk and
right.
Where at a Moxie you're expected to spend less time at the room and more time in the common area.
So basically, enough room for you and your iPad.
Pretty much, yes.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio. With no particular place to go.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. Most of you have never been to Medellin. My next guest had never been to Medellin until he decided to come basically because he was looking for another place to hang out and vacation. From Dallas, Texas, he's actually the founder and editor-in-chief at themedellinguru.com. Jeff Paschke, how are you?
I'm doing good.
So you're sitting home in Dallas one day saying, I got to get out of here, and what were your choices?
So basically, I ran across this book that was published by Life Magazine.
You're dating yourself.
Yes, I know. But basically, it was the top 100 places to see in a lifetime. And I was looking to go someplace warm, and two places in that book caught my eye: Cartagena, Colombia, and Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And I decided to go to Cartagena because it was closer and cheaper.
And then from Cartagena, you came here.
So basically what happened, I went to Cartagena, had a fantastic time, and went back on vacation and brought some friends with me. But I met some expats in Cartagena that said, well, if you like Cartagena, you need to go to Medellin. That's how I discovered Medellin.
And you've been here now for what, 8 years?
Over 8 years.
Wow. And there's so much about the city that most visitors don't know. You've been stereotyped, I know, because of our friend Mr. Escobar. Although that was one way to see the city, I suppose.
So basically, Medellin still has a challenge to overcome. You know, if, Americans, when they hear Medellin, they think of narcos and Pablo Escobar. And that's actually 25 years ago. Medellin has had a remarkable turnaround in the past couple decades, and it's a completely different place.
In what ways is it different?
For example, Medellin a few years ago was named the most innovative city in the entire world, even. So it does a lot of things that are relatively unique.
Give me an example.
They invested in transportation to some of the poor neighborhoods that are up the hills in Medellin. So they have cable cars that they use for transportation to better integrate the poor neighborhoods into the places where there's jobs.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
And they've got a pretty good mass transit system.
Yes. It's one of the things that attracted me to Medellin when I first came here. It's very easy to live here without a car, with the cheap and inexpensive metro that goes everywhere, cheap buses, and cheap taxis.
Well, speaking of cheap taxis, you know, I always look at a place for, does it have a high standard of living? And the best combination, of course, is does it have a low cost of living? Here you have a low cost of living.
Exactly. And that's one of the
other
things.
I took an Uber here today. Mm-hmm. You know what it was? Take a guess.
$5.
$2.80. In New York, you burp in a cab and it's $16. So, I mean, that is a good indication of how much else you're going to be spending with a differential.
Mm-hmm. That cost of living is one of the things that attracted me to Medellin. But the first thing that really attracted me was the climate. Medellin is known as the city of eternal spring, and it has basically the same temperature range all year round.
So you're not wearing sweaters?
No. No sweaters. Some occasionally shorts, but no air conditioning, no heating required.
Perfect. Now, here's the question, though. This is my understanding of not just Medellin, but maybe Colombia. Things do take a little longer to get done here.
That's one of the downsides is that...
I'm glad I mentioned that, yeah.
You know, no place is perfect.
Right.
And it's not just Medellin, and it's not just Colombia. Things take longer. You need to kind of lower your expectations. When I first started furnishing an apartment here, you know, I'd buy something and they'd promise it in 2 days, didn't show up for a week.
Right. Well, you were styling. But the other cool thing about coming here is you can come to Colombia for up to 180 days without having to get a visa.
Exactly.
So for people who want to come down here and have an extended vacation, it's totally doable.
And that's actually what I did the first 3 years that I was living here. I split my time between Dallas and Medellin. I was working remotely from my house in Dallas, and there was no difference working remotely from Medellin.
Same time zone. Central.
With voice over IP, the same phone number even.
What do I do to hang out here where I'm actually going to be able to immerse myself in the local culture and not just take the Pablo Escobar tour?
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things. One thing I'd recommend doing is trying the local cuisine.
Well, you don't have a choice. I don't want to go to Burger King.
Actually, you do have a choice. Medellin's a big city, about 4 million in the metro area. So there's actually a very wide
I know you can get a pizza here. I know you can get sushi here.
Uh-huh.
But when you say local cuisine, you know, when I'm in Peru, it's guinea pig.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it here?
So here there's a variety of local cuisines, and one of my favorite restaurants to bring visitors to is a restaurant named El Rancherito. And so basically this is a restaurant that has a huge menu of local cuisine, the comida típica in Colombia. And so you can have things from bandeja paisa, which is a very common dish here. Which is a huge plate of meat, rice, beans. It's basically a very filling meal. And it was originally intended for the ranchers to have a big lunchtime meal. But this is a huge plate, and after you eat that, you want to go take a nap.
Well, you have to go take a nap.
Exactly.
All right. So, but what else would I order?
What else? So Colombia also has a number of very good soups. They're probably one of the most interesting is one called mandango soup, which is basically tripe.
It sounds like a bad B movie from the 70s. Mandango soup.
But actually, it's pretty good.
Well, you either call it mandango or tripe. I don't feel like I want to eat it. Can I pass on that one?
You can pass on that one.
Okay, good. Keep going. You mentioned soup. Is there another kind of soup?
So there are a number of other soups, but I'd also recommend trying... One of my favorite dishes here in Colombia is actually from the coast, which is fried fish.
Now we're talking.
And they actually fry the entire fish.
Can you eat the whole fish?
Well, of course, you don't eat the bones.
I know, but sometimes when they when they cook it that deep, you do.
Yeah, but it's something that's pretty unique here in Colombia, which I haven't seen in other countries, where they actually fry the entire fish.
Now, I mentioned Pablo Escobar, so I have to mention him again. Very funny story that the mayor of Medellin hates the idea of the name anymore of Pablo Escobar. There used to be a number of tours here, the official Pablo Escobar tours. You could go to his ranch and see the shot-out cars. You could go to where he lived, where he tried to bury the money, where he got shot up, where he died. And now they basically said, the mayor said, no, I don't want to do that.
So it's actually interesting. On my Medellin Guru site, I have a couple articles about Pablo Escobar, one about his grave and another one about...
Can I make an admission? I went there yesterday.
Yeah.
I did. They're still putting flowers on it.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
He's still a hero to some people.
He is still a hero to some people, but it's really sad that a lot of the expats that come to Medellin, that's one of the first things they want to do. They want to go on a Pablo Escobar tour.
Guys like me? I had to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, for a guy who binge-watched Narcos, I just had to see it for myself. But the point is, when I got there, I wasn't alone, number one. And number two, there were flowers on his grave. And my guide was telling me, by the way, this is not an official Pablo Escobar tour, by the way. We just did this. We freelanced this one. Mm-hmm. But he was telling me people are there every day putting flowers on this guy's grave.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I actually had never been in 8 years until...
One of your friends showed up?
No, until some of the readers of the Medellin Guru site said, well, ask questions. And I finally went and wrote an article about it. And I called it an unfortunate tourist site.
I think you're right. And we also went to see his Monaco house, which rumor has it all the stones came from from Monaco. My understanding is the city's going to implode it.
Yeah, that's scheduled early next year, I believe.
Yeah.
And another thing is the city just shut down there was a Pablo Escobar museum here in Medellin.
Run by his brother, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the city just shut it down, actually.
Wow. And yet you would think, if you go to Vegas, what do they have? The Mob Museum. Mm-hmm. You go to Berlin, you can tour, the Führer Bunker. I would think that I understand why the mayor doesn't want to, promote that legacy, but it's almost inescapable.
It really is inescapable. And basically, it's something that Medellin still struggles with. But it's part of the history of the city.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
Joining me now, I could call her an expat now. She's an American journalist here in Medellin who writes for Columbia Reports. Megan Janetsky, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, you Arizona transplant, you. So what brought you here?
I was always interested in doing international reporting, did some in Mexico a couple years ago, and in Arizona, I was drawn to the border in Mexico. So I was also really, really drawn to, especially here, the Venezuelan immigration crisis in Colombia. And Medellin has a very interesting story just in terms of a long history of violence and now the city shifting into a more modern and different Medellin.
And what are you seeing?
I mean, I'm seeing, it's really interesting because a lot of the people I talk to.
Because I'm gonna yeah. jump in. I'm going to presume you had some preconceptions.
I mean, yes, I know I knew people who were here, and I think everybody has preconceptions, or quite a few people before, like, getting to know the country and doing research. Of course, like, Colombia, like, for instance, when I told my father that I was moving to Colombia.
Whoops.
Yeah, like, a lot of Americans have this, like, kind of ingrained stereotype of Colombia that is very not true, and comes from, you know, the violence in the 80s with Pablo Escobar. But I, as a reporter here, I'm trying to kind of turn that narrative.
And how are things with Dad?
With turning the narrative?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's changing. It has been changing in, like, the past couple of years through word of mouth and, like, media, like this, like, conversations about the country, about how Medellin is a largely peaceful place, a very cool place.
I'll be devil's advocate. You're mm-hmm. an American woman. You're here by yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you feel unsafe? Do you feel threatened?
No, I've never felt unsafe.
Right. And you could be streetwise anywhere. So, yeah. So when you talk to your friends, forget Dad for a second. But when you talk to your friends, I'm assuming that they have some preconceptions as well. Some of them might think you're a little nuts to come down here until, of course, they get down here and see for themselves.
I mean, I would say that's accurate. I would also say most of my friends tend to want to do international work generally. So
they're
in the same, to come with.
In the same sphere. I got you.
Yeah.
All right. So other than what we just talked about, when you got down here, what was the biggest surprise to you?
That's hard. I think it was because I'd been to Mexico, and it's very similar, but I think...
And Mexico's taking the heat in the press, too, you know, about gang violence and drug violence and murders. I mean, they certainly have their fair share of that, but it's gang to gang. It's not directed at American tourists.
Yeah, I would say the thing that's similar between the two countries is how friendly and kind people are. Like, I mean, I lived in Washington, D.C., where for a time, and, like, one time I, like, pet someone's dog and, like, asked their name on the street, and someone was like, "Where are you from?" Like, clearly you're not from here because you're talking to people on the street, versus here where you talk to everybody on the street, and it's my favorite part of Colombia and Latin America.
Listen, any destination that encourages conversation, count me in. Right?
Yeah, I would agree.
What about living here? Because I look at a place, one of my metrics for anywhere I want to live is, does it have a high standard of living and a low cost of living? If it has those two things, wow, I can't wait to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I live Poblano, the neighborhood where I'm kind of in is, there's like a higher cost of living, but the neighborhood I live in, for example, like Laureles, has a lower cost of living, and it's by, like, many locals, and you really get to know the culture better.
I mean, give me some comparative prices, because I always gauge the real cost of living by how much does a tube of toothpaste cost, how much does a Big Mac cost if you eat that stuff, how much does a taxi ride cost, or a pair of shoes. And, you know, I took a taxi here yesterday. I took an Uber here today. It was like $2.90. I'm like, yeah. Really? Wow. Count me in.
Yeah. For example, there's a market, a big, like, kind of open air market by my home, where if you go there for lunch, it's run by a Venezuelan family. You can get a giant plate of soup, some sort of meat, rice, and a salad.
Okay, wait, stop right there. Please don't describe the menu as some sort of meat.
No, it's like, you can pick. Chicken.
Now we're getting closer.
Like,
okay.
just the best food you'll ever have, and including juice for like 10 mil, so like less than $3.
Wow.
Like about $3.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
And you can live with that.
Oh, I can definitely live with that.
Okay, let's flip it over. What's most expensive here that you weren't expecting?
Ooh. I brought it with me, but I've heard sunscreen is very expensive. And I know that's a very
duly noted
thing. And you can't find good cheese. Like, it's, I'm
a cheese fanatic, by the way.
Yes. So, like, if I could have, like, brie and, like, a baguette for every single meal, I would be very content. And it's both difficult to find good bread and good like Italian-y, like bougie cheese. Yeah.
Excuse me, you're in Medellin, Colombia.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look on the website, it doesn't say cheese capital of South America.
It does not. They have a lot of cheese. They have like Latin American cheese, but it's not the same.
Although I will tell you, if you go down to Argentina, at the Park Hyatt there, they have a cheese sommelier. Ooh. And I'm telling you, you haven't lived until you've had the Argentinian cheese paired with the wines.
Okay, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is. You should go.
Okay.
And right now, by the way, speaking of cost of living,
yeah,
the Argentinian peso has become so devalued against the U.S. dollar. You got a 7 times marketing advantage in terms of buying power than you had only 3 months ago.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. The peso 3 months ago was sort of like 5.7 to the dollar. It's now 35 to the dollar.
Mm.
I mean, do the math. Even I can, who failed math, can do that math. And what a great time to go down there.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. All right, so I'm sorry about the cheese in Colombia.
It's a sad time in my life. Yeah. Not really, but that specific facet, yes.
Okay, so your next report is going to be lamenting cheese, is that it?
Yes.
Last but not least, our friend Mr. Escobar, dead for 25 years, but still very much alive in this town in terms of his folk hero status among so many people.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's actually kind of a problem that's arisen now because of this Netflix show Narcos, where people are getting drawn.
One of my favorite shows.
Oh yeah, people are getting drawn to the country because of it, but it's caused a lot of problems. There's specifically like narco tourism and like people. There are people here who have lived through this violence, and like for a lot of people who visit, it's a game. It's this like cinematic just thing out of a movie. But then there are people, like I've met people who are like, my aunt has been kidnapped by like the cartels.
We're talking real stories.
Yes.
Should there be a rapid change in cabin pressure, oxygen masks will automatically drop from the compartment above your seat free of charge. And to start the flow of oxygen, pay your flight attendant $75.63. Mother, God rest her soul.
For those of you who are being, you know, who are binge affected with shows like Narcos, you probably don't think there's any culture in Medellin. Well, you're wrong. In fact, there are many museums. A little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about the Museo Casa de la Memoria. But, and by the way, it's a free museum open from Tuesdays to Saturdays. But first, let's talk to the head curator of the Medellin Museum of Modern Art, Emiliano Velez. How are you?
Hello. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. I mean, every city has a culture. Every country has a culture. And sometimes that culture gets overlooked because of misbranding, if you will, of, you know, you mentioned Medellin to most Americans, and they think they're going to get shot in the streets. What they don't realize is that Pablo Escobar was killed 25 years ago.
Right.
Now, you've been here how long?
I've been here for nearly 4 years.
Right. And you came here because there's a great museum here called the Museum of Modern Art in Medellin. You're the head curator.
That's correct.
A society expresses itself through its art. I'm assuming that some of the modern art here expresses that period of time as well.
Absolutely. So the museum was founded in 78 by a group of artists and intellectuals and citizens. And throughout even the worst years of Medellin, which, as you'll know too well, the 80s and the 90s were very rough. But even through those years, the museum really strived to keep close to the artists and what were they were producing. I think there was a lot of referring to those aesthetics, often in a non-overt way. But I think it's undeniable that a lot of at least the aesthetics that were managed by, you know, the narcos and how that permeated into society went into their artworks.
And you display it.
We do, absolutely, yeah. We strive to keep a very close connection with the artists from the city, but also about 3 years ago, we opened a new building which triplicated the museum's capacity, and that also gave us the opportunity to engage in broader dialogues, some of which have to do, of course, with the history of the cities and the societies that produce the art that we're showing, but also sometimes we don't. So we try to keep, like, like an open agenda in which the history of the city is discussed in relationships to also broader topics.
But you're also really talking about Colombian art of the 21st century.
We are, and in fact we're preparing a large group show which is going to showcase two decades of contemporary art in Colombia, starting from 2000 to 2019. The exhibition opens next March, and we're very much looking forward to that because we also assume that some of these topics that we're discussing previously are going to come forward in that exhibition.
What would you say is for somebody visiting the museum for the first time, would be their biggest surprise, what they're not expecting to see?
Well, I would like to think we have a cutting-edge contemporary art exhibitions program, which is not something that people necessarily know. I mean, they can find here artists that are showing anywhere in the world right now. But at the same time, we have a very strong collection of Antioqueño artists. One of the I would say, most relevant, or one of the largest collection is by Débora Arango. Débora Arango was this Medellín-born, really innovative woman who for very long was sort of cut out of the main artistic circles because of her incisive comments on religion and politics, and because she was the first woman who depicted other naked women, which of course at the time in a very conservative society was a no-no.
Okay, I'm going. No, but the bottom line is you have the outside artists, really. These are the outside artists who are now coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I think Medellin, as you might know, is a city that for a long time has been sort of very inward looking, and we're really trying to connect the art that's being produced here with art that's being produced elsewhere, as to create connections and dialogues, because finally human experiences, even if they're very different, that human component can relate through that, and I think that's something that sort of boasts or powers both what is being produced here and what has been done outside.
Well, at the end of the day, it really all gets down to the conversation, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And I think it gets it also comes down to the perspective from which you look at things. And in that sense, I think we try to provide people with as much context as possible, so that whenever you're looking at a work, you know, you have elements to read into it and to maybe compare it with your own experience.
Well, the story that you just told me about the woman artist who was painting, you know, doing something that was not unheard of at the time. When I go to the museum, is there something there that explains that in context to me?
Yeah, so right now we have the hang of our permanent collection, which varies about once a year. It's an exhibition called Contrarrelatos en la Colección MAM, which translates to Counter Stories in the MAM collection. And the idea is to keep a sort of like the side B of the history of our collection. And in that exhibition, of course, somebody that was so disruptive has a very important place.
Well, in a world of disruption, modern art has its place.
I would like to think so, yeah. And we'd like to think that art is a space, is a place where you can really try to dig into things that you're not allowed to do anywhere else, because there are a lot more barriers in the world that there are in the
Come
art.
Fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me.
My next guest knows a lot about this city because she's the director of the Museo Casa de la Memoria. And every city tells a story. Every city has a history. And unfortunately, sometimes the history is marred, or just it's sort of like skews to one corner because you may have heard just only one thing about it. But there's so much history in this city, so better to talk to Adriana Valderrama, who's basically the director of the museum. Welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you.
Well, you heard my introduction.
Yes.
You know, most people who come down here, at least the Americans, who've been addicted to shows like Narcos, all they want to do is talk about, you know, Mr. Escobar.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more.
Exactly. And that's exactly the work we do. We work in our exhibitions and our research to be able to build like a narrative as plural and inclusive as possible.
To tell stories.
Know? Exactly. The story of the city. The story,
and it's an old city.
Medellin is an old city, but we also have certain exhibitions where we point out certain time of history that we think is important to go through again to understand better the present. So there's the old saying
that if you can't remember the past, you're doomed to repeat it.
Exactly. We've been working for the last 2 years in the exhibition that we have at the moment that is called Medellin 70s, 80s, and 90s, because it's exactly the time where all this problem with narco traffic, Pablo Escobar, are mafia cartels and all that kind of violence happen here in Medellin. So we decide to go back into that temporality to be able to create a narrative that is inclusive, is not a monologue, is not being built to be publicity or to right. make money out of it.
And, you're not taking sides, you're just taking telling a story.
Exactly, we're plural. And we build our narratives within the territory of Medellin. We work with the social organizations, with leaders, with the cultural sport areas. We also work with the private sector. We are part of the public sector itself. And what we're trying to do is to create an exhibition that at the end turns to be like a pedagogy tool for us to have a reflection with our visitors about past and the present, and to understand that the way that I like to think about it is to put things into the real perspective and to realize that Pablo Escobar is not exactly the guy or the character that is being built through the cinemas or more public entertaining.
And yes, and yet he is still considered by so many here to be somewhat of a folk hero, because at one point with all of his bad money, he was building houses and he was supporting a football team and things that you'd never expect anybody with that kind of visibility to even want to do.
Exactly, but I think it's a misunderstanding as well about those acts. I mean, he was giving houses away, but the real purpose of giving those houses away was to be able to buy people conscious and to youth people and young.
Well, we have a saying, there's no such thing as a free house.
Exactly. So that's exactly what we do. We're more critical about the narrative. We don't stay like in the surface. We will go deep. We bring proof. We use the archives. We use the testimonies of people that were affected directly by this conflict. And basically, we are not putting our lights on Pablo Escobar. We're trying to put the lights in another kind of leaders and people that was able to resist and to keep against this character,
And at the same time, keep the fabric of the city together.
Exactly. At the same time, we work through this process to be able to reveal, as you say, the wood, the social wooding, and to be able to have spaces for reconciliation and to understanding and to listening and to be able to create like an open and inclusive narrative about the city, the past, the present, and to think about a communal future.
Well, that asks the question for me, at least, has there been a reconciliation?
Well, I guess yes. Medellin, if you go back, Medellin is a city where we are plenty of demobilized people from different organizations and in different processes. And we also have a lot of victims, and we also have civil society, and we all, chair spaces in the city. I'm not saying it's perfect or it's done.
It's a work in progress.
Exactly. But it is what it is. We're the city in the world with the higher number of people that is being demobilized, and actually the city in Colombia with the higher number of direct victims of the conflict, not just about narcotraffic, because narcotraffic is one aspect of our conflict.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.